All right, y'all, here's how to support the show. First of all, sign up for the RSS feeds so that you don't miss a show. LibertarianInstitute.org or ScottHorton.org for those. Also, subscribe on YouTube, youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. And sign up at Patreon. Anybody who donates a dollar or more per interview at patreon.com, you get 2 free audiobooks, and that can be including my book, narrated by me, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. So help support that way. Sign up at patreon.com/ScottHortonShow. And send in $50 at ScottHorton.org/donate. You get a signed copy of the book Fool's Errand, of the paperback there. And anybody who donates $100, used to be it takes 2. Now for any donation of $100, you get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian audiobooks. And there's already a whole bunch of them, and there will be more. Lifetime subscription for any $100 donation to the Scott Horton Show from Listen and Think Audio. Or you can get a silver QR code commodity disc, which is a really cool currency. Silver 1 ounce disc with a QR code tells you the instant spot price on there. And just go scotthorton.org/donate. There's also a PayPal for single donations, or you can sign up to do monthly donations on PayPal as well. And take all different kinds of digital currencies, especially Zencash, zensystem.io for Zencash, and of course all the different kinds of bitcoins and etc. like that. So check all that out at scotthorton.org/donate. And hey, by the way, if you like this show, review it for me on iTunes, Stitcher, etc. If you like the audiobook, it's now available on iTunes as well as audible.com. So leave a good review on there if you like that, and help get that out. Thanks.
Sorry I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Oh, we ain't killing they armies, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, man, say it 3 times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, on the phone, I've got the great, well, it's not actually not on the phone, on Skype. I've got the great Gareth Porter. He wrote Manufactured Crisis, The Truth Behind the Iran Nuclear Scare, and he has 2 very important articles about North Korea right now. One of them is at Truthout, Media Hardliners Play Up North Korean Nuclear, quote, Deception Claim. And then in the American Conservative Magazine, The Media's Brazen Dishonesty About North Korean Nuclear Violations. Welcome back to the show. How you doing, Gareth?
I'm doing fine. Thanks, Scott.
Man, I'm so grateful for the work that you do. I'm serious. You know, a lot of people have been objecting to the ridiculous attempts to undermine the North Korean peace talks here, but nobody does it like you do here. So we've got 2 different articles along the same lines here. What's the difference?
Yeah, the first one, Scott, just to be clear, the title had a comma after either, I guess it was Media, comma, Hardliners.
Yeah, I tried to say it that way. I'm not sure if it came across right.
Yeah, just to make it clear that there are two sort of entities here that are involved in this drama, not just one, although they're obviously very closely related. So the first story really is the hook for it is the beginning of the actual negotiations between the Trump administration and the Kim Jong-un government, North Korean government, about a denuclearization agreement were to begin last week, or I guess the previous weekend, but just days before Pompeo, Secretary of State Pompeo, was to go to Pyongyang again, We have a little drama involving a set of stories that came out on June 29th, June 30th in the NBC News and the Washington Post that were telling about a new intelligence report that was claiming that the North Koreans were known to be planning to deceive the United States in these talks and in an actual agreement by concealing secret facilities and not owning up to them. And that then, that was leading to a supposed revelation about a secret site called Kang Song, which the Washington Post had already reported in May, in fact, that supposedly, represented a secret enrichment facility that North Korea, of course, had never acknowledged. North Korea has one acknowledged enrichment facility for uranium enrichment in Yongbyon, the nuclear center, the center where they do all their nuclear work, but has never acknowledged any other site for doing enrichment work. So this was the hook for both of these stories, basically, although only one actually mentioned Kang Song. The Post article mentioned Kang Song. So my article eventually then gets to the real revelation here that, in fact, this alleged site at Kang Song is nothing more, has never been anything more than a suspicion. And the primary evidence for it was a defector who in 2010, if I remember correctly, said that he knew about the site or he suspected the site because he worked nearby. Now, that meant, of course, that he had never been inside the site. He was acknowledging that. It just seemed to him that that's what it was most likely. And in fact, this whole business of the site was written about by our friend David Albright. We've talked about him on a number of occasions. Mm-hmm. And he was leaked information from the administration in late May or sometime in May and wrote a piece that basically laid out the case for the Kang Song secret facility. And actually, and this is the most interesting part of the story, I think, Albright expressed some open skepticism about the case, starting with that the guy who originally told about it was clearly not somebody who'd actually been inside. It was simply his suspicion. And secondly, it turns out that there's aspects of the building that emerge from obviously satellite photography that are inconsistent with the thesis that it's a uranium enrichment facility. So this is a very, very weak case and always has been. And that's really the essence of that first story.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, so it's important to note here for those who aren't familiar, David Albright runs the Institute for Science and International Security, something like that. The good ISIS, he likes to call it. And we've run up against him numerous times. He used to claim he was a nuclear weapons physicist, but he's not. But anyway, the real point is that he's a very hawkish guy on Iran, Korea, and all kinds of things. And he loves having these scoops about, oh, look at the intelligence I figured out. A lot of times it just comes from Mossad or the MEK kooks or whatever. But anyway, the other point is sometimes he's honest. And sometimes he at least has an incentive to not be caught being very wrong. And so, as we've talked about, he called out the New York Times over, Iranian missile designs in the forged Israeli laptop. And other things like that. So it's, as you say, here he is making the case for it and yet throwing cold water all over his own case, really, and saying, yeah, well, we still don't really know.
That's exactly right. I think you've nailed it precisely that David Albright has been very dishonest. And in fact, I've written about this. He clearly shifted radically on Iran in 2008, 2009, late 2008, early 2009, and began to take the Israeli line consistently, everything that he wrote after that, until the final negotiation of the nuclear deal with Iran was a reflection of the Netanyahu government's line. Mm-hmm. So he's very suspect in that regard. But you're correct that at the same time, when he's not, shall we say, already on the take, he has an incentive not to be caught embracing something that can be clearly later on shown to be untrue. So yeah. I think
again, we should say, because he's been caught numerous times. He didn't support the lies about Iraq's nuclear program, but he did support the lies about their chemical weapons stockpiles before Iraq War II. So. He should never be able to live that down. Anyway, this is just a parenthesis anyway. But the point is, first of all, about this site, you're saying that, there's no real way to know. All you see is a roof. You don't know if there's spinning centrifuges in there or not.
Yeah. And the anonymous sources who always surround this kind of issue have told the Post that there are other independent strands of evidence that support the suspicion that this is, in fact, an enrichment site, but they don't specify what the pieces of evidence are. And even the Post ended up in its report on May 25th, the same date as the report by David Albright, saying, this is a suspicion. It's suspect. There's nothing more than that. They've got no more case than that. And that's really the bottom line.
Hey, I got another bottom line. How about... So what if they do have a uranium enrichment program? One, if that building does have centrifuges spinning in it, we don't know if they're spinning up to weapons grade purity or not. And even if they are, well, North Korea, because of George Bush, and as you detail in your previous journalism, is no longer a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, so they're not breaking the law. They even said, we announced that 6 months from now, we will withdraw from the Non-Proliferation Treaty back in 2002. And then that's exactly what they did 6 months later, just like is stipulated in the treaty is the only way to leave it legally. That's the way they did it. And so maybe you and I and Donald Trump and John Bolton wish they weren't spinning centrifuges, but they're not in violation of international law in doing so. Or I guess, I don't know, maybe there are UN Security Council resolutions I'm not referring to here. You could clarify about that, I guess. But then more importantly, and you really point this out in your other article, that we have this huge contradictory set of narratives going on in the media here. On one hand, Donald Trump is such a chump that he went and bestowed legitimacy on the dictator of North Korea by giving him a handshake and got absolutely nothing for it, while at the same time, anything that the North Koreans are accused of doing in terms of work on their nuclear or missile infrastructure since then is deemed to be a failure and a violation of the deal that they say was never made.
Yeah, well... let me just go back to your original point that, we don't know for sure if this is an enrichment site. It's possible, it's conceivable that it could be. You can't deny that there's some distant possibility that that's the case. But I have to say that after all this time, the evidence that has been put forward is just pathetically weak. And I think that's really the bottom line as far as we know at this stage. So, again, we come back to the idea that this intelligence report, which turns out to have been written by the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is notorious for writing reports that, as I point out in the piece, are worst case based analyses. Anytime that the issue relates to a military interest, you can count on the DIA to take a hard line. And I think that's certainly germane to understanding the nature of the mm-hmm. case that's been made here.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask you again about the law in a second, but I want to go ahead and throw this in at that point, because you have this great quote here in the article from Donald Trump's current national security advisor, John Bolton, who then worked for George Bush Jr. in the State Department, and said that these rumors of the North Koreans attempting to get aluminum tubes and centrifuge infrastructure from the AQCON network or whoever else that was, quote, the hammer I had been looking for to shatter the agreed framework, the excuse he needed to break the deal that the Clinton administration had made with the North Koreans to keep them within the non-proliferation treaty. And then, of course, and importantly, even if they had been spinning centrifuges then, one, that wasn't in the agreed framework, and two, they have the right to nuclear technology. It's guaranteed in the NPT, and that wouldn't have been a violation. If it had really bothered them, it could have been the subject of future negotiation. But instead, this was the excuse, the hammer I'd been looking for to shatter the agreed framework, Bolton said then. And then, interestingly, the reason I'm harping on this is because when they started setting off nukes in 2006 and ever since then, best indications by all the experts who claim to know as best they can are that these have all been plutonium implosion bombs. None of them have been uranium gun type nukes. And they already had fuel for their Pyongyang reactor, which is where they're getting their plutonium from the waste from the reactor there. Before. So apparently, if they're spinning centrifuges and enriching uranium, nobody knows what they're doing with it yet. Anyway,
well, let me just address the Bolton factor here. That was going to be my next point, because I've now run through the case that has to do with the Kangsong alleged nuclear site. And what I wanted to go back then to is that the actual origins of this leak of the DIA report, which then was translated into NBC and Washington Post stories, is somebody in the Trump administration wanted to influence the press at that crucial moment just before Pompeo was to go back to Pyongyang. Now, who might that be except for John Bolton? John Bolton, we know, as you've just cited, in the past has been the guy who was maneuvering within the bureaucracy, using intelligence reports, leaking them to the media, or using them within the bureaucracy to devastate efforts to negotiate with North Korea. And that's apparently what happened in this case, because we know Bolton was the one who was proposing that Pompeo take to Pyongyang the proposal that the North Koreans would have to denuclearize essentially within a year, and that the process would have to begin with a declaration of all their nuclear sites and their sites for their long-range missiles, or for their missiles. And so he was an essential player in trying to shape the policy that the U.S. would embrace in Pyongyang, the proposal that the U.S. would embrace in Pyongyang. And so there's every reason to believe that it was Bolton and his people, it didn't have to be Bolton personally, but somebody working for Bolton leaked the story of the DIA analysis to the two media outlets. Mm-hmm. And so this is really a story about how Bolton was behind it, as much as it is about the questionable nature of the Kangsong, the Kangsong site. Hmm.
Well, it sounds like maybe Bolton's winning the fight inside the bureaucracy too there, if it's really him versus Pompeo, because, well, and I don't know if this is true at all, really, but there was this Bloomberg story about Pompeo's recent bad trip to North Korea and how, you know, the North Koreans characterized his demands as gangsterism and this kind of thing. And
yeah, no doubt.
And it was because he put complete denuclearization first and without right. offering any kind of reciprocal anything. In other words, he was kind of, Pompeo himself was acting like Bolton with a bunch of poison pills rather than trying to be agreeable.
Yeah, but it looks to me like Bolton won that round. Now, mm-hmm. I'm just wondering to what extent having two stories in major news media that reported this idea that there was evidence from the DIA analysis that the North Koreans were intending to deceive the United States was useful to Bolton to tip the balance within the meetings in the White House that were deciding what Pompeo was going to take to Pyongyang. And I suspect very strongly that's exactly what happened.
All right, hang on just one second. Hey, guys, here's who sponsors this show. Mike Swanson and his great investment advice at WallStreetWindow.com. He's actually posting some stuff at the Libertarian Institute website now. Really great stuff. The great Mike Swanson. And he's also the author of the book, The War State, which is a really great history of the rise of the new right military-industrial complex after World War II in the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy eras. You'll really want to look at it. The War State by Mike Swanson. Also, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. If you listen to Mike, you'll be buying some metals. You'll want to buy them from Roberts & Roberts. They've been around as long as I've been alive. They've got a great reputation. They take the very smallest premium possible in order to help arrange the very best sales for you at platinum, palladium, gold, silver, of course, and no premium at all if you buy with Bitcoin. They're at Roberts & Roberts. That's rrbi.co. rrbi.co for your precious metals. There, as I mentioned before, Zencash. Zensystem.io to learn all about this great new digital currency, and which is also a secure messaging application and document transfer device and all the rest there. Learn all about it at Zensystem.io and read the book. It's by Hussein Badakhshani. It's How to Run Your Tech Business Like a Libertarian. That's not the title. The title is No Dev, No Ops, No IT. Those are all one word each, if you take my meaning. No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. It's really great. And check out libertystickers.com for all your anti-government propaganda. I made up most of them. And yeah, that didn't work out with the new website I kept promising you. But now supposedly someone else is promising one. So I guess we'll see if we ever get a new website. But there's still a lot of great anti-government propaganda, and you could buy it at libertystickers.com. Now, one more thing. Check out scotthorton.org. We've been having some server problems, but otherwise, scotthorton.org is a great-looking new website, as you can tell. And if you want a good 2018 model website for your business or for whatever you're doing, your opinions, check out expanddesigns.com, the great Harley Abbott over there. And if you go to expanddesigns.com/Scott, you'll save $500. All right, so now let's get back to the point, though, about whether it matters one way or the other, whether they've expanded this or that facility, or whether they're enriching uranium, even up to weapons grade, one, in terms of international law, and two, in terms of the current agreement.
Well, I think that it would be a matter of trust, you know, the degree to which North Korea could be trusted not to have secret nuclear weapons production facilities. They've got an acknowledged one, and that's the way they've played in the past. And, you know, to have a secret nuclear weapons, a facility for producing the enriched uranium for nuclear weapons without acknowledging it would be obviously a problem for trusting them. I think that's the issue. It's not a legal issue. It's a trust issue.
In other words, if they were part of the NPT, they would be bound by the law to declare any facility where they're going to introduce nuclear materials 6 months before they do so. But that's they're right. Not a member of the NPT, and so that's that. Yeah. And if you want to blame anybody, hey, look whose fault it is. It's John Bolton's fault in the first place.
Well, obviously the North Koreans have a problem of trust of the U.S. government. I understand that completely. I'm now looking at it from the opposite angle.
I mean, I'm talking about the kind of the media spin here. And all the hawks spin on Twitter and all of that kind of thing is that this all proves what a chump Donald Trump is for even trying to negotiate with North Korea. We'd be way better off with the status quo. We'd be way better off if Singapore had never happened.
Yeah, and I think the correct answer to that line of argument is the entire history of North Korea's negotiating with the United States on the nuclear issue has been one of very punctilious observation of agreements that have been reached. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't take advantage of any loophole. Absolutely, they do. They have, just like the United States does. But they have not violated agreements reached or understandings reached with the United States. They have very scrupulously observed them. And, I mean, practice that they have, I think, quite consciously adopted because they want to make the point to the United States that we are a trustworthy negotiating partner, we will carry out our agreements. But if you violate them, we will do something about it. We will respond in kind. That's the record that they've amassed over the years.
Mm-hmm. Hey, tell me, who's Joel Witt?
Joel Witt is the guy who was an advisor to Ambassador Gallucci in negotiating the agreed framework, 1993, 1994. And then he became the State Department's coordinator for the implementation of the agreed framework from 94 to 2000. So, and then he started the 38 North website, which is, you know, the most sort of comprehensive and reliable website for information on North Korea that one can find, I think, at this point.
Mm-hmm. And then, so importantly, you talk about him in your article in the American Conservative magazine and his take on this recent controversy.
Yeah, Joel has been very forthright about not agreeing with the media trumping up, so to speak, of a case that the North Koreans are trying to deceive us here. He thinks that that is really irresponsible, and that's not his word, but that's my reading of his statement there, that he thinks that that's not an accurate reading of what North Korea is doing now.
Yeah, I mean, people were taking his article and his pictures and saying, oh my God, look at this expansion. This is just shows what, you know, a hoax these talks are and how foolish Trump is for trying, et cetera, et cetera. No mention of the South Koreans. I'll ask you about that in a second, maybe. But
yeah, now this you've gotten now to the second article.
But in the same, I'm on the second article. In the same article, he says, now look, everybody, don't go freaking out because there's no agreement for them to not do this. And this is stuff they were already doing anyway. And there was no need for them to call a halt to it yet, basically.
Yeah. So this second story is really about another spate, a separate spate of articles in late June and early July from the usual suspects. You know, NBC News was involved in it. Wall Street Journal was into it. And the storyline was, oh, look, the North Koreans are continuing their expansion of their missile and nuclear facilities, even as they are negotiating with the United States, even after the summit meeting, they're continuing to do this. And this shows that they're not serious about reaching an agreement. They're simply taking, you know, the Trump administration, as you put it, as a chump. And so that's the storyline that informs this set of articles. And you know, the point that I make in the piece, and that Joel also underlines in his comment, and which he made, by the way, in a briefing for reporters last Monday. The point is that, look, there is no legal agreement that would under which you would expect the North Koreans to end any work on missiles or on nuclear facilities that have to do with enrichment. There's merely an understanding that we are going to negotiate on a denuclearization agreement, which also, of course, will involve U.S. concessions on political and military aspects of the U.S.-North Korean relationship. And so there's no legal requirement, and there shouldn't be any political expectation that North Korea is going to suddenly stop everything that it's doing in regard to its defense programs and its nuclear program. Joel, by the way, makes the point, which is extremely, I think, useful to just keep in mind, that when the United States has negotiated arms control or arms reduction agreements with the Soviet Union or Russia, that there was never any expectation that, during the negotiations, that they were going to stop anything. They continued as business as usual until the final agreement was reached.
All right, now let me ask you this. This NBC story came out was by a guy named Ken Danilian. I'm probably saying it wrong. He used to write for the LA Times, and back when he did, he was outed by WikiLeaks in the emails of being a completely obsequious agent of the CIA. And I don't mean officer of the CIA. I mean, you know, asset. And doing their bidding. And, you know, writing propaganda for the Los Angeles Times. He lost his job there because of it. Now he's at NBC. And so, you know, this is sort of a speculative type of a question, I guess, for you. But I wonder if you think that this really represents, you know, not just an analyst with a hawkish interpretation, but a real attempt by the intelligence agencies to thwart and stop the president, like true insubordination, to stop the president from achieving this deal. I mean, it sounds like the National Security Advisor is too, but I mean, that's worth addressing too. I mean, Bolton does work for Trump in a sense, right? Or not?
Well, I think Bolton in this case is working for Bolton. He technically works for Trump, but he clearly is undermining Trump's effort to reach an agreement with North Korea, assuming, as I do, that that's what Trump wants. We have every reason to believe that. And I have to tell you, just this is not really an aside, because this is a central question that we're talking about. I have a hard time believing that Bolton's going to survive this process. I mean, he's just too crazy. He takes too many chances. And I think ultimately it's going to come back, just come home to roost, and that Bolton will be fired. That's just a hunch. I don't have any inside dope.
Man, but I hope that's right. I mean, I actually have a little bit of inside dope that said that this is just to please Adelson for a little while, and he'll be gone by the end of the summer or something. But I say go ahead and get on with it then.
That would be the logic. I think you're absolutely right, that's why he's in there. It's because of Adelson. And, you know, I think that's going to wear thin to the point where he's going to have to let him go, you know, because he's got to make a choice. So anyway, about back to Ken Danilian.
Sure.
I think the storyline about Danilian and the CIA is a clear cut case of a journalist on the make who understands or who believes, let's put it that way, who believes that cultivating higher level CIA people by telling them, I'm doing this story, I want you to okay it, I want to make sure you're happy with it, that's the way to get his inside dope from the CIA in the future. And that's the way the press has always operated. I mean, this was not that remarkable a case. It was captured by WikiLeaks, and that's what was different about it. But this is the way the national security reporters in the Post and the Times and the—
Well, so that being said, does that mean that that's where his narrative is coming from, is a political agenda by Langley to undermine Washington, D.C. on this?
No, I don't think the CIA was behind that story at all. I think that was— I think that it was the Times and in this case, NBC News, you know, picking up the vibes in the administration from people who are opposed, not necessarily the CIA, because, you know, the CIA now is on board, unless you're catching a working stiff who is, you know, out of sympathy, you know, Pompeo and his people were already, you know, working on this from a point of view of supporting Trump. I think it came from the people who are more aligned with Bolton, and generally, you know, it's the media, even more important in this case. I think it's the media who are all in favor of trying to dump the agreement with North Korea. That's their bent. It's not just that they're getting stories from opposition people within the Trump administration. They're manufacturing them themselves. So, I mean, that's equally, if not more important in this case.
Yeah. All right. Now, when it comes to the all important question of denuclearization, I have my arguments. I think that it's certainly at least within the realm of possibility that they'll denuclearize. But so my question for you is, you really think they will after Bolton pushed them to nukes in the first place and threatened them with the Libya option and all this, as he tried to put it, a Libya scenario where Gaddafi was lynched on the side of the road? Or does it matter? What if we had a peace deal, and then but they didn't denuclearize all the way. But who cares? Because either they join the NPT as a nuclear weapons state, or they stay outside of it. But still, we have a peace treaty to end the 50s war, a final. Because that war, as people may or may not know, is still just ended with a ceasefire, no real peace treaty there. So if we just ended the war and normalized relations and dropped sanctions and open trade and diplomacy and all that, and they still had at least some of their nukes, would that be okay or no?
Well, look, I think there are two sides to this story. The first side is that the United States has no idea where North Korea is stashing its nuclear weapons. It probably knows where some of them are, but assuming that North Korea has somewhere between 10 and 25 or something like that, they've got nuclear weapons that the United States has no idea where they are. And I mean, that's a fundamental problem. You know, the United States is going to try to say to North Korea, you have to tell us where all your nuclear weapons are. And if you don't tell us where 26 of them or 30 of them or 40 of them, whatever they decide on, that's going to be a critical political decision for the United States to say how many nuclear weapons they're going to say North Korea has to declare. Then that's a basis for basically saying that the North Koreans are in bad faith and not negotiating the agreement. But that also means that in effect, there's no possible way that a potentially secret stash of nuclear weapons can be, in the end, prevented. I mean, you know, they can't do it. That's a given. That's part of the territory here. The other side of it is that, you know, the most likely, almost certainly, the way in which this agreement will collapse is that the United States political system will be unwilling and unable or unable to provide the kind of concessions that the North Koreans will inevitably demand in order to avoid the Libya scenario, to avoid that being a danger to them is what I mean. So, I mean, the real problem here is that the U.S. government is so unable to deliver what has to be delivered for this kind of agreement ultimately to be reached and to be carried out. I mean, that's the whole record of the past 25 years, yeah. that there's so much political opposition from the military, from the media, from various other elements within the national security apparatus of the United States, it translates, and in Congress, of course, and it translates into the inability or unwillingness to deliver this kind of an agreement. That's really the danger. And yeah. I think that's what we should be focusing on.
Man, you know what? So back to Pompeo, though. So you made the interesting point that he went from Congress to CIA director, where he started breaking this ice with the North Koreans there. With not a Secretary of State, but with all CIA guys as his staff, they made the initial progress here. And, you know, it seems pretty obvious that a conspiracy of two between Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo could start a war anywhere in the world, maybe kill everyone on Earth. So if they could do that, then maybe they could just do a peace deal and the rest of the establishment and the media and everybody can go to hell. I mean, apparently, right, I'm just making this up, but it must be the case, right, that at some point Pompeo said to Trump, yeah, no bullshit, we really could do this, and so go ahead and give me the okay to go ahead and try, because I'm telling you, I think we could do it. So that's pretty damn good, right?
No, I think that's correct so far. You're absolutely right on, but that doesn't solve the problem, the more fundamental problem that I'm posing, which is that, look, this agreement would have to take the form of a treaty. I mean, you can't have an executive agreement with the North Koreans on this. That's not going to wash. It has to be a treaty, which is binding on success.
I don't know, man. Obama did it on Iran. And, of course, then Trump did turn it right over again, but still.
Yeah, but that's not going to be acceptable to North Korea, and it shouldn't be acceptable to North Korea. They'd be crazy to agree to anything except a treaty. So the question is, can the U.S. political system deliver that kind of a treaty? I'm afraid the answer is no.
Man, isn't that something? Yeah, you would need for Rand Paul to be at his most heroic. And place your bets, everybody. I don't know.
Yeah, you need like 60 Rand Pauls in order to get that passed. I don't know.
I mean, the thing of it is, though, you know what? I saw something, and it was about, I don't know, I think it was Feinstein and them in the Senate. The leaders of the Democrats in the Senate wrote a letter quietly supporting a new nuclear deal with Russia, because this is something that they've been working on, the government's been working on for years. And at the end of the day, you know, they know all this Russia stuff is a bunch of crap. And at the end of the day, do we or do we not want more and better nuclear deals with Russia all the time if we can get them? Yes, we do. And you know what I mean? So if you really, if the president of the United States said, I'm delivering up a peace treaty and USOBs are going to ratify it, they'd have to, wouldn't they?
Look, if the president is so committed to it that he goes to the American public and he does it effectively.
Donald Trump is the president.
That's exactly the point. Yeah, that's a problem. That's problematic. You know, I mean, that's where the whole scenario suddenly falls down.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly does. John Bolton up there, man. I'll tell you what, it's a funny thing, this 2018. I mean, it's the same permanent crisis we've been in, but now it has this wrinkle of absurdity that just makes it,
I know, exactly,
a different kind of entertaining, I guess. I don't know.
Absurdity, but it's the wrong kind of absurdity to enjoy, I must say.
Yeah. You know what, though? I mean, look at where we are, where they did Singapore. They shook hands, and that means a lot, right? I mean, the ice is broken. I guess Trump could get really mad if he felt betrayed on this by Kim. But so far, it looks like some pretty thick ice broken pretty severely.
He can negotiate it. There's no question about that. It's negotiable. The problem is what comes after that, and that's really, at a deeper level, we're in serious trouble on that.
Wouldn't it be funny, though, to see the whole right wing, Sean Hannity and all these guys going to full jihad for a peace treaty to support their man? That would be worth it just to see that, even if it failed.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not sure that we would get that in the end. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, thank you very much for your time on the show, Gareth. Great journalism, as always.
My pleasure as always. Thanks, Scott.
All right, you guys, that's the great Gareth Porter. He is the author of Manufactured Crisis, The Truth Behind the Iran Nuclear Scare. And check out this article at truthout.org. Media, hardliners, play up North Korean nuclear deception claim. And at the American Conservative, the media's brazen dishonesty about North Korean nuclear violations. All right, you guys, and that's the show. You know me, scotthorton.org, youtube.com/scotthortonshow, libertarianinstitute.org, and buy my book, and it's now available in audiobook as well, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. Hey, it's endorsed by Ron Paul and Daniel Ellsberg and Stephen Walt and Peter Van Buren and Matthew Ho and Daniel Davis and Anand Gopal and Patrick Coburn and Eric Margolies. You'll like it. Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. And follow me on Twitter @ScottHortonShow. Thanks, guys.